You know, I was in the Congress during the Orville Freeman days, and I know he's a neighbor, and he's a very fine man, and he just wasn't a very good Secretary of Agriculture. Every time the price of corn would go up, he'd find some out-of-condition corn somewhere. To go up to $1.08, he'd find enough out-of-condition corn to drive it back to $1.05 or $1.04. And I think a telling clue to the future under a Carter administration is found in their platform. Don't take my word for it. This is the Carter platform adopted in New York City, and it says, and I quote, "At times, direct government involvement in wage and price decisions may be required to ensure price stability." Now, those are key words, price stability. Now, out in Kansas, where I come from, and I think you know in the great state of Wisconsin, price stability means for dairy, corn, cattle, and hog prices, that means low prices. That's what the consumers refer to as stable prices, and the liberals in the Congress refer to as stable prices. And that's what we'd have, according to this platform, and it's Mr. Carter's platform. And if he didn't drive farm prices down by imposing direct wage and price controls, he'd employ an arsenal of more subtle but just as damaging price-depressing mechanisms. And I've just said that they want a grain reserve to preserve stability. Well, stability, again, means low prices for America's farmers. And I've been saying ever since I've been in the Congress, maybe not too effectively, that we're going to end up someday in this country unless we let the farmers make a profit with no farmers or very few farmers or very large corporate farmers and corporate farms, and then the consumer will have no place to turn at all. They're going to be at the mercy of those large interests and those large farmers or corporate farms, because when the farmers were leaving the farm, we turned our back and said, "Oh, go away. You're not important in any event." And what else would they do? What else has Senator Mondale and Governor Carter promised the American farmer? Well, they've got a little system. It's called export licensing. Senator Mondale, of course, is a sponsor of a bill. It's the number, if you want to check it, is S-513, which would require exporters of farm commodities to obtain an export license from the government before shipping your farm products. And that kind of government interference would almost certainly impede exports and lower farm prices. It's just the kind of device that Governor Carter could use, and he talked about excessive grain sales to Russia in last month's issue of Reader's Digest. He said one of our largest causes of inflation were excessive. He used the word excessive grain sales to Russia. And this is the very time he was hitting Ford over the head, President Ford over the head, for the embargo. But I suggest to you that if we have export licenses advocated by Senator Mondale, who served on the Senate Ag Committee for a few years and then left because he said it wasn't interesting enough, we in effect have a legislative embargo, which would certainly depress market prices, or, again, I would quote that word, stabilize farm prices. Now, I know that we've all had problems in agriculture, certainly in the state of Wisconsin, but despite these problems, farm sales are increasing. Sales for meat animals increased $57 million in 1975 over 74. Dairymen here received $1.4 billion for wholesale milk in 75. That may not be up enough, but it's up $100 million from 1974. But corn, oats, and wheat production may be down in 1976. And that leads me to just a comment or two that next year the Congress will be considering the new omnibus farm bill. The administration recognizes the need to provide some type of disaster protection for farmers. We will urge that be included in the new legislation. As you know, the current disaster provisions relate only to wheat, cotton, and feed grains. And in states like Wisconsin, you have concerns about hay and forages as well. And perhaps the most appropriate thing to do is to extend federal crop insurance to a wider variety of crops and to a larger geographic area. This will require the cooperation of Congress, but I think the job can be done. And of course, as you know better than anyone, the demand for Wisconsin milk and Wisconsin dairy products continues to grow and grow. And this is a tribute to the quality and the wholesomeness of the product you produce. And at my urging during 1976, and the record will confirm this, The Secretary of Agriculture has been making a quarterly review of milk price supports, and I know that this is something that many of you in the dairy industry have wanted for a long, long time. And the most recent adjustment of the dairy support price early October brought the level up to 8.26 per hundredweight. It's my hope, and I understand the price has gone down just a little bit in this past check, but it's my hope that the market demands will remain strong and that the prices, of course, will be well above that support price. I also think it's fair to suggest or fair to say that the President's going to be signing in the next day or so the most far-reaching forestry legislation in 50 years. And this legislation has been planned carefully to provide the greatest good for the greatest number. And I believe it is legislation which will be good for the lumber industry in Wisconsin. It will provide jobs for this state, and it is fair to both the environmental and lumber industry interests. And I think most importantly, it has safeguards to protect our forestry resources in the future. And that means we will have lumber products and associated jobs many years in the future. It's not just a quick fix to get us by for the next couple of years. So I would only conclude the comments about agriculture first with a recognition that many farmers, Republicans and Democrats and independents have expressed some concern about grain embargoes. I did. I'm a farm state senator, and when the embargo was imposed, I complained. I did it publicly. I expressed my views to the White House, and I think there was some at some time in this campaign when many farmers, yes, Republicans and Democrats and independents were saying, I can't vote for President Ford because of the embargo. I'm going to wait and see what Governor Carter says about the embargo, or flat out, I'm going to vote for Governor Carter. That was 6 weeks ago. That was 4 weeks ago. That was 3 weeks ago. But I think now there's a shift from Governor Carter to Mr. Ford, and I think it's probably for one or two basic reasons. First of all, certainly, farmers are concerned, and farm families are concerned about their own interests. You should be. But beyond that, you're concerned about inflation. You're concerned about taxes. You're concerned about government spending. And don't let anybody kid you about the new estate tax provisions passed by the Congress. They still need some revision. And I wouldn't be standing up or be on television taking all the credit for that, unless I thought the farmers and others in any area hadn't read it very carefully, because it has a little capital gains thing in there, a little tax later on in some other generation that might not be so good. The initial impact might be good, but what about your children? What about your grandchildren? And I've already talked to your candidate for Congress, Adolph Gunderson, and he's already looking ahead and trying to figure out some way to correct that in the next session of the Congress, where he'll be there. And we'll have a real congressman concerned about your interests and concerned about inflation and concerned about spending and concerned about the future of America. So let me conclude by suggesting that, yes, there was some unrest. Some people ask how I got on the ticket, and some are asking that now with more frequency, I've been saying to my friends. Is it because he's on the Agriculture Committee and the farmers are mad at Ford? Is it because he's in the Midwest and that's a tough area for President Ford? Well, that may or may not have been true. I don't know. Someone said he flipped a coin and it didn't come down and he decided I was a natural to be vice president. But I have had a long interest in agriculture. I don't think I have to impress that upon anybody. The record is there. And I probably don't have a 100% dairy record, 100% feed grain record. But we worked it out and we worked for agriculture. But there's another factor that concerns the American farmer, and that's the influence of organized labor and almost the dominance of George Meany and other labor leaders in the Carter campaign, and they'll be there in a Carter administration. Now, it's been asked, you know, they asked Meany one time why he didn't run for president. He said, why step down? He's got a pretty good grip on that party now. And they control the Congress of the United States for all practical purposes. And I don't think the American farmer or many American working men and women and others who are concerned about spending and inflation want to turn the keys of the White House over to Governor Carter and George Meany. And that's not an exaggerated claim. That is not an exaggerated claim. Look where their money goes. You've seen what's happened in this congressional district just 2 years ago. They want rubber stamps. That's who they want in the Congress. Now, I don't suggest, in fact, I suggest just the opposite. Labor ought to have a great deal of influence. They represent, or say they represent, millions of American working men and women. But 75% of the workforce in America, 75% of the people who work, do not belong to labor unions. So why should they have 60 to 70% of the Congress? And I can tell you that there are a lot of union members worried about gun control. That's advocated in the Democrat platform. Senator Mondale was one of 17 senators who voted for registration and licensing of handguns. They're concerned about force busing. You may not be here, but the working man and woman is in some of the urban areas. Senator Mondale is known as Mr. Busing in the Senate. They're concerned about right-to-work laws in some states, in 20 states, where you have a right to join or not to join a labor union. Both Governor Carter and Senator Mondale want to do away with that. They want to take away that freedom and that option for the American worker. And you go up and down the list in that platform. If you find anything in the Democrat platform, the liberal Democrat platform, that talks about more freedom for the family or more freedom for the farmer or more freedom for the working man, I'd like to see it. It's not there. Oh, they talk about all the good things in life. More health care, more education, more this. They're all very good. We have the same views. We're for the same people. But who's going to pay for it? Who's going to pay the $100 billion? And that's really what it's all about. So I would just hope that knowing farmers as I do and knowing that they're very cautious and very discerning and very sophisticated, don't take my word for it. Don't take President Ford's word for it. You can check our records. And finally, to the mothers and grandmothers and young people in this audience, there's just one overriding matter in this campaign that Carter doesn't like to talk about. And that is, we're at peace in the world. Your sons aren't being dragged off the farm or dragged out of school. They aren't being forced to register for a draft. They're not being shipped off to some far-off country to fight some battle or engage in some war that we know nothing about, that we don't want to win. And I kind of wonder sometimes if the American people really think about peace in the world and really think about President Ford's leadership. And now, for the first time in years, we have real growth in the defense budget. And stop to think about the economy, which isn't perfect, but it's pretty good and it's getting better. More people are working than ever before in history. A greater percent of the population, 40% of the American people, are working. Unemployment is high, yes, but there are many more people looking for jobs because the economy is sound. But the rate of married men unemployed is about the same today as it was in 1960. So what's really so wrong about America? We're respected by our friends. We're respected by our adversaries because we're strong. And because President Ford is our president, because he has the experience, and because he has the leadership. And I just believe that the women in this country are going to think long and hard about turning out a president who stood there and restored dignity to the White House as the economy turned around and we're at peace. I just find it difficult to believe that somebody's going to walk in to that voting booth and say, I don't like President Ford because we're at peace. I don't like President Ford because the economy's rebounding. I don't like President Ford because he's an honest, decent man who's never changed despite the great power that he has. He's still the same open, candid, decent, accessible American he was 2 years ago or 10 years ago. And I don't find much to fault in that. We're not perfect. We've made mistakes. President Ford would be the first to admit that. And I just ask you, as friends and farmers and others who may be concerned about America, that it's easy to tear it down. And Governor Carter says we're a weak nation. Governor Carter says we're not respected. And we can run around this country finding fault and nitpicking. In fact, Senator Mondale said yesterday that neither President Ford nor myself were fit to be dog catchers. Now, if I'd have said that, the media would flip. They'd been out of their skins. trying to rush to the sets to say, oh, there's that hatchet man. But as I said last night, the dogs can relax. We're not running for dog catcher. Because we're go-getters, and the dogs would be in trouble if we were. So I'm just very happy to have been here, and I hope that come January that Adolf and others will be there to help us, and you are going to be there. I really like doctors, even though I... I had to beat a doctor in 1974, but he was a very liberal doctor. There's a difference. They always take out more than they should. That we needed. There was a doctor shortage in our state, and so he used to run around to our state saying he was one in a million. He was the only one of 213 Americans or 230 who had a law degree and a medical degree, and he had all kinds of degrees. He was almost too well qualified to be in the Congress, but now he's one in 7 million. He's out of work, but the country's better off for it, believe me, because he had this same liberal philosophy that Governor Carter has and that Senator Mondale has. And I know last Friday night I kept referring to Senator Mondale as my friend, and he is. I can never get him to acknowledge that he even knew me, but we are in the Senate together. And he is. He's got a great voting record. He's got a perfect record with labor. He's got a zero when it comes to national security. He said he had 100 with the League of Women Voters. And that's got to mean they're a little bit liberal if they give him 100. And he's a fine man. It's just his philosophy that's all warped. He just doesn't understand that Americans like to do things for themselves and that farmers want to get the government off their backs. We got all these liberals in the Congress running around for solutions. They've even got solutions for problems that haven't arisen yet. They always end up with the same treatment. Just spend more money and take it away from you, bring it back to Washington, create a new agency, spend more money, send out more bureaucrats, and just sort of meddle and interfere in your lives. We get enough of that. We had the OSHA pamphlet this year, which I'm certain you all were pleased to have, on safety with beef cattle. Have you read that one? It must have been very enlightening. Not like Playboy, but you learn a lot if you look at the pictures. As I recall, that pamphlet said, don't talk or talk gently to your cows. And I was asked about that and said, well, farmers get so frustrated sometime, they've got to talk to someone. And they can talk to their cows, and the cows don't talk back. That's better than they do in the house sometimes, or wherever they might be. But I'm just proud to be here and appreciate it very much. And we really believe, and I'll have to admit my bias, because I've discovered if Ford makes it, I'm going to make it. So I have a natural bias. So I'm not asking you to do a thing for me. Just go out and vote for President Ford and to work for President Ford and send us a man we can be proud of in the Congress, a man who will work for you. And you know, sometimes working for you means voting no. There's such a thing as a positive no in this world. We haven't seen much of it in the Congress. But when I studied for my debate, I took a lot of letters we'd had from people all across this country. And I remember a letter from a lady, a mother, who said that Republicans shouldn't be defensive about voting against spending. Said she had children, and sometimes she had to say no. That didn't mean she didn't love her children. Probably meant she loved them more. You just can't give your children, or we can't give somebody else everything if we're the government, because it's your money we're spending. We have to go in debt sometimes to do it. So we're very proud to be representing a party, one of our major power parties. And I just say, for the good of America, vote for President Ford. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to see in the front row a friend of mine that I was in the hospital with for some time, Ralph Ott, Mrs. Ott, your daughter? Julie? Well, good. Well, nice to see you here. Well, let me say, To all those in attendance, it's a good place to be. America's always a good place to be, and I'm happy to see some Republicans here and some Democrats here and some independents here and some who probably just came to the wrong meeting. So we're very happy to be here. I've always said, and I'll say it again, that pineapple juice is a lot better for you than peanut butter. For one thing, it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. Let me say, tonight's a very important night in America. Whoever you may be supporting in this election, I've said, and I've tried to be very candid about it, that the debate tonight and the response of Governor Carter and the response of President Ford could well determine the outcome of the election on November 2nd. And I'm not suggesting that's the way it should be. I'm suggesting that's probably how it's going to be. Because it's sort of the playoff. I think Ford won the first debate, Carter won the second debate, and this is sort of the final game and the final game before the big game on November 2nd. And so I would hope, whoever you may be supporting, that you'll be tuned in tonight in an effort to make some objective judgment. Yes, judgment about President Ford or judgment about Governor Carter. Because whatever our views may be, we are Americans. We're concerned about America. We're concerned about the future of America. And the choice we make on November 2nd is the most important one. Now, I'm very proud to be running with President Ford. I've been in politics for some time. I understand the pros and the cons of politics. And it's a great thing in this nation that not everyone agrees with me, or everyone agrees with Governor Carter or President Ford or Senator Mondale. And I doubt that everyone agrees with every student in this audience. But that's what makes our country great. And that's why we are the greatest country on the face of the earth, because we have diversity, because we can disagree, and then go about our business after the game is over, the election is over, the debate is over, or whatever. This year, and I assume everybody who comes, whether it's, I understand McGovern has been here, Udall has been here, Senator Humphrey's been here, former President Nixon has been here, you've had a I'm just reciting the facts. You can applaud whenever you want. As I look down, or look back to August 19th, and someone was asking, you know, why are you selected to be on the ticket? I'm reminded of that morning on August 19th when we turned on the television at 7 o'clock. And we were told that it was down to four, that four names were still in the running. And whoever won had to be in Kansas City by 12 o'clock noon. It was 7 a.m. then. And so the first name mentioned was Ann Armstrong. Well, she was over in Scotland. I knew she couldn't get back, so I scratched her off the list. The second name was Bill Ruckelshaus, an outstanding Republican from the state of Indiana. And he was out in Tacoma, Washington, so I didn't see how he could make it. Besides, his name was too long for a button. So I scratched him off the list. And that left Senator Baker and Senator Dole. And I said to my wife, Elizabeth, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I think we've got a chance. But in any event, after a few minutes, the press started gathering in the hall on the 17th floor of the Muehlbach Hotel in Kansas City. And our room was right next to the suite occupied by Governor Connally. And I assumed that Governor Connally had probably been selected, but in any event, after a few 30 minutes or so, I said to Elizabeth, go to the door and sort of listen and see what's going on out in the hallway. That's legal in Kansas City if you listen from the inside out. It's only when you turn it around you get any problems. But you did hear my name mentioned, or the name Doe mentioned, and she said she wasn't certain someone asking for relief or having a pineapple party. But in any event, when the call did come, when President Ford called, I think I must confess that I accepted before I identified myself, thinking he might have gotten the wrong number. But that's the way it's been. And we've been on the campaign trail since August 20. We've been in 41 states in this nation. We've been doing our best to talk about the issues, trying to clarify the issues, to tell Americans what I know about President Ford and the fact that I've known President Ford for some 16 years. And one thing about President Ford, he's predictable, he's decent, he's honest, he's a man of integrity, and he hasn't changed since he became president. And that says a lot about anybody in America, man or woman, who assumes some position of prominence or some position of power. If they retain that common decency and that accessibility and that openness as President Ford has. So President Ford is a known quantity. As against Governor Carter, who's an unknown quantity. And I would guess, as I think back at some of the statements that Governor Carter has made and some that he may make, I'm somewhat confused from time to time. I didn't always agree with Senator McGovern in 1972, but I always knew where McGovern stood. He laid it right out there for the American voter. And you could take your choice. You knew precisely what Senator McGovern stood for. And I might say that since that 72 election, we've become rather close friends, not political friends, but we work on legislation together, whether it's the Dole McGovern food stamp reform or some Ford legislation, farm legislation, or whatever, because we understand that beyond the philosophical differences, there are a great many areas in legislation and a great many areas that concern Americans that are not partisan. And that's really what it all about, what it's all about. And I could say the same for Senator McCarthy. Whether you agree or disagree with Senator McCarthy, you know where he stands. He's a man of integrity and a man of honesty, as is Senator McGovern. But I'm compelled to say I can't to make the same finding insofar as Governor Carter's concerned. Now, Gerald Ford has been a public man for more than a quarter of a century. He's been President of the United States for 2 years, and few men in public life have been as carefully scrutinized as he was because of the unique nature of the process by which he came to office. The last 2 years, as I look at the presidency, as I looked at it immediately before he came to office, I think it's fair to say that President Ford has restored confidence in our government. He's worked very quietly and steadily to heal the wounds of Watergate, not by rhetoric, but by example. Been a lot of legislative pardons, I'll tell you about sometime, by the Democrat Congress. But by example, he's earned the respect of foreign leaders, both ally and adversary, and he has turned the economy around, and the figures show it. And the inflation is down, and the GNP is up, and a record number of Americans are employed in an economy which has created 4 million new jobs in the past 2 years. And I think the longer you think about it, the more you'll understand that that's a good record. But I would say one more thing about President Ford, and one more thing about politics generally, and one more thing about America today. As I look into the final week of the campaign, that's going to be a very close election, make no mistake about that. And we're going to carry the state of Wisconsin, make no mistake about that. But the one thing that strikes me more than anything else, and in preparation for our, I guess, meeting with Senator Mondale last Friday.
Mondale won.
Well, I didn't. That's only one vote. Mondale said yesterday that neither Ford and I should be running. Pardon? There are always about three Carter people in every audience. I remember yesterday Mondale said, and he was talking about the president, President Ford, which, and also about me, and I don't care what he says about me, but he said they shouldn't be running for dog catcher. That's that great man on the other side, that man of compassion and integrity. And I can tell Mr. Mondale that, and I can also tell all the dogs in America, that we're not running for dog catcher, and they're probably lucky we're not, because we're go-getters, and we'd give the dogs a hard time in this country. But I can say this about President Ford.